This edition of Sunday Extra falls on the 3rd of May 2020, meaning it will be 5 years until Sunday Extra can celebrate Star Wars Day, May the 4th, live on radio. But never fear, May the 3rd is also a very significant day in itself and in a much less flippant way. The 3rd of May is an important Polish public holiday commemorating the declaration of the Constitution of 3 May 1791, which is generally recognised as Europe's first modern codified national constitution and the second oldest national constitution in the world. Now, 3 May Constitution Day falls in 2020 at an especially fraught time for Poland. There's the pandemic, of course, and it comes when Poland is at loggerheads with liberal Europe because of the governing party's steady erosion of the rule of law. The European Commission has just given Poland 2 months to address concerns about a law for disciplining judges who criticise government reforms of the judicial system. On top of that, a presidential election is scheduled for the 10th of May. But Human Rights Watch says that the ruling party is only offering two options, both of which are flawed. Either an election on the 10th of May using a hastily assembled mail-in voting system, or extending the president's term for 2 years. Donald Tusk, the former European Council president, has called for a boycott of the presidential election. Well, to discuss the state of Polish democracy on 3 May Constitution Day, we're joined from Poland by Anne Applebaum, staff writer at The Atlantic. Anne, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. Could you start by just giving us an outline of the significance of 3 May Constitution Day in Poland?
Sure. Well, Poles are very proud of their democratic tradition, which goes back actually even beyond that. Poles had elected kings, and there were discussions about how to make democracy work here going back many hundreds of years. A number of famous Polish political leaders and statesmen actually fought in the American Revolution. Tadeusz Kościuszko was a close friend of George Washington, visited Mount Vernon. And so there is a deep democratic tradition here that was brought to an end, really, right not long after that 3rd of May Constitution was passed, by the invasion of autocracies by Russia, Prussia, and Austro-Hungary, who invaded Poland and divided it up. So Poland didn't even exist in the 19th century. But the holiday has continued. Interestingly, in the communist era, it was forbidden. And so people celebrated it kind of surreptitiously. And 3rd of May was brought back after 1989. And it's one of Poland's two important national holidays.
And obviously, we think of 1989 as the great sort of return of democracy to Poland, but things have very much changed in recent years. What's your assessment of the state of Polish democracy on 3 May Constitution Day 2020?
It's a really sad story, although one that's also very complicated. Essentially, Poland elected a ruling party in 2015, which has sought not to end democracy, but to curtail it. In other words, to undermine some of the institutions that you need to maintain it, to politicize the court system, to pack the courts, to undermine independent media, to take over state media and make it into a kind of party political broadcast, which it had not been after 1989, and to use the power of the state to make democracy dysfunctional. In other words, to make it almost impossible for others to compete with the ruling party. Political scientists argue a lot about how to describe the kind of political system that Poland now has and that Hungary has and other countries around the world. They use the expression illiberal democracy. But that's a little, you know, really you could call it flawed democracy. It's an attempt to essentially to create a one-party state, you know, to make sure that the deck is stacked, you know, the cards are marked, and the ruling party can't lose the next election.
And of course, that illiberal or that flawed democracy is experiencing a time, as the rest of the world and the democratic world is, when illiberal measures are really sort of required on public health grounds. How has that played out in Poland?
I mean, you're exactly right to point to this. You know, in a lot of countries, liberal measures have been kind of agreed on by consensus, and they haven't necessarily been used to damage democracy permanently. Here, the ruling party is seeking to use the pandemic to increase its own powers in a whole variety of ways, one by trying to pass laws and measures that, you know, in normal times would be difficult or would cause outcries, or sort of pass things through now while people are distracted by other things, to complete the court packing process, for example, you know, while the rest of the world is distracted and while most Poles are distracted. But really, the deepest problem that we have in Poland right now is the fact that we had presidential elections scheduled for May the 10th, you know, just a few days away from now. And this is a moment when you cannot have a free election in Poland. There has been no campaigning. Nobody's been allowed to campaign. There is no system right now for organizing the vote. Many local councils have said they will not organize the vote. They will not agree to have the vote. The government has tried to create a system of postal voting, which is profoundly flawed. I mean, this is a country with no tradition of postal voting, and they're suggesting that people vote via packets that will be delivered that will have your name and the equivalent of your social security number, your taxpayer's number, will be on the ballot. So it will not be a secret ballot. And there would be a solution to this, or there could be, which is they could simply postpone the election until the autumn. And Poland's constitution does allow for something called a state of natural disaster, which is a little bit not quite a state of emergency, which would have allowed this. If they would have declared that, it would be possible to postpone the election.
Yeah, so why haven't they done that?
They haven't done it because they're afraid that in September, once unemployment kicks in and once the right. numbers of, you know, the healthcare disaster is worsened, that they'll lose. And so they've been desperately trying to have this election any way they can right now, at a moment when, as I say, nobody's been campaigning, nobody wants to talk about politics, nobody's interested in hearing about it from anybody, and when there's no way there can be a free vote. And they're trying to do it at all costs to make sure that the current president, who is a member of the ruling party, it's called the Law and Justice Party, will win.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Anne Applebaum, staff writer at The Atlantic, about 3 May Constitution Day and the state of Polish democracy. And it's often the case that when there are public health crises or major crises, that you do see a surge of support for, if not the ruling party, then definitely the leader. Has that happened in Poland? You know, what's the state of the polls, if there is even one, leading up to 10th of May?
There was a small surge in support for the ruling party. It's come down a little bit, partly because there are other issues with the way the pandemic is being handled here. There's quite a lot of secrecy. There's a deep suspicion that the government is not revealing the real statistics, the number of accusations of manipulation of statistics.
Yeah, because the statistics don't look too bad in terms of the...
The statistics are not bad. And Poland got the disease very late, you know, after another number of other European countries had already had it and locked down very early. And so they have, you know, the spread here has been more contained than in some other European countries. But we aren't really sure, because the way that deaths are marked, it's not clear how many people really have it. There are a number of worrying stories, particularly from hospitals here, which have been badly affected. And we have the same shortages of face masks and gowns and so on that everybody has. But again, that's been subject to some obfuscation and cover up as well. So there isn't that much trust for the government. And partly because of this issue to do with the fact that there's a presidential election in a few days, people suspect that the government's handling of the crisis is political rather than scientific. In other words, people suspect the prime minister of having ill will. You know, we don't know if the measures they're taking, for example, to open up the country again, which are also meant to go into effect quite soon, we don't know if those are happening in order to make the election possible, or whether they're real, or whether they'll have to be reversed soon. There's been a loss of trust precisely because of the politicization of the pandemic reaction.
Now, you mentioned the closed borders in Poland, and that was something that was very personally affected you. Could you tell us a little bit about how the closing of the borders affected your family, but also what the broader impact of the shutting of the Polish borders has been for Poles across the world?
So the borders were closed here in a very strange manner. In other words, I'm not necessarily against border closing, and I can see that for, you know, to stop the spread of the virus, it's necessary to stop some physical movement of people even inside countries. But here it was done extremely abruptly, and it was done in such a way that it created almost maximum chaos. I mean, people had 24 hours to get back into the country. And this is when me and my family came back. My husband was here. I had been in London. I immediately, as soon as I heard the message, I bought a ticket. And we, our son, who was at a university in the United States, we called him. We said, you have half an hour to get to the airport. You have to get back here immediately. He actually landed in Europe on the border closure went into effect on Saturday night. He landed on Sunday morning. And that meant when he landed in Germany, eventually in Berlin, he had no way to get back into the country. And so he got out of the airport. He went to the train station. He took a train to the border, literally to the border town, Frankfurt on the Oder, got out of the train and walked across the border, across the bridge, across the Oder River, you know, as if it was in a spy movie, you know, carrying his luggage, you know, with sort of drones in the air and guys in hazmat suits and roadblocks and people in military uniform carrying guns. And he walked into the country, and my husband met him on the other side. And this was typical. I mean, there was no preparation made, no consideration given to people who were stranded. The government wound up having to fly people back from all over the world. For several days after the border closure, the border guards were not even letting people cross the border who were transiting across the country. So all kinds of truck drivers, you know, who needed to get home to Ukraine or to the Baltic states, were stranded for many days on the German border. They were sort of lined up along the border. The German Red Cross was bringing them food. It was a scene of total chaos. And all of this was unnecessary. You know, things could have been done in stages. People could have been given warning. But it was precisely this abrupt closure, and maybe even the chaos itself, that caused initially a positive reaction. You know, Poles wanted to see some extreme measure being taken. And this is 6 weeks ago when people wanted to see something happening. And this was a kind of demonstration of state power that people found appealing at that moment. But the quarantine was reinforced in a very, I would say, even 19th century manner, namely policemen drove up to our house every day to see if we were there. We all had to walk out onto the porch and wave at them, which, you know, they were very friendly and we understood why they were doing it and so on. Although that is of course also not something one would like to see continuing much into the future, you know, regular police visits. But this border closure, you know, gave the government a kind of brief spurt of popularity. And that seems to have been the point of it.
And Applebaum, you've told us about the consolidation of the Law and Justice Party's use of the executive power of the government. How strong is the opposition to the Law and Justice Party, if it's possible to speculate about an election that wasn't as compromised by coronavirus as this one is? How strong is the opposition in Poland?
So the opposition remains strong. The main thing is that there is still one independent television station, and there are a few independent newspapers. So there are alternative forms of communication. It's not like Hungary or Turkey or Russia, where it's much harder to get independent news and information. And the opposition actually controls not just major cities, but all cities. I mean, almost all mayors, I think, are not from the ruling party. The opposition is divided into different parties, so they're not all from the largest opposition party, but they represent a spread of people. And in the polling that was done before the coronavirus, there was certainly a chance that an opposition candidate would win. Since the coronavirus destroyed the campaign, disoriented the candidates, and made campaigning impossible, that's all changed quite a bit. The opposition's main problem is that it's divided. It's not a single party. It's several parties. And its other main problem is that if you watch state television, and something like a quarter to a third of Poles do not get any television except for state television, because it's the one TV form of television that's free. If that's your main source of news, and as I said, for a significant portion of people it is, then you don't ever see any opposition figures at all. You don't see their faces. You hear very little about them unless it's negative. So that's probably the main stumbling block. The ruling party's control of funding for itself and for its candidate also gives it huge numbers of advantages. It uses state companies, which it now controls, to fund party political, kind of sort of regime, pro-regime newspapers and magazines and events and so on. There are a number of advantages built into the system now for the ruling party, but there is still a real opposition, and it does make itself heard.
Well, whether the presidential election occurs on the 10th of May 2020 or not long after that, it will be fascinating and crucial to watch how that election turns out. Anne Applebaum, thank you so much for speaking to us to mark Constitution Day, the 3rd of May 2020. And of course, we'll be looking out to see what the state of Polish democracy is on 3 May Constitution Day 2021.
Thank you so much.
That was Anne Applebaum, staff writer for The Atlantic on the 3rd of May, Poland's Constitution Day.